Hello, you're listening to Micro News, the podcast where Matt...
Hello.
...and I talk about some of the times that microbes have been in the news this month.
I don't think we need to say that we're ignoring COVID.
No, but we're in person.
We are in person for the first time in 5 months. Feels very strange, but nice.
Yes, very nice.
So, should we get started?
Let's do it.
My first story is about acute oak decline. It's a disease similar to gangrene in humans, and it affects oak trees in the UK. It mainly affects mature oak trees over 50 years old, and infected trees look like they're bleeding from the bark as a dark fluid leaks out from small lesions or splits in the tree. Thousands of trees have been affected with the disease, and it usually kills them within 4 or 5 years of becoming infected. Researchers have been working to discover the cause of the disease. They're doing it by introducing various bacterial suspects to samples of oak bark. They found that it wasn't one bacterial species and it wasn't even solely bacterial. A group of bacteria interact with a boring beetle, Agrilis bigitatis, and they cause the infection. They change the composition of the tree's microbiome, making it easier for the disease to spread and eventually kill the tree. Boring beetles create holes in trees for the larvae to grow in. The scientists discovered that the bleeds on the bark cause wounds that overlie areas of rotting tissue inside the bark that include these exit holes from the boring beetles. Study author James McDonald told The Times that we've tried to disentangle the different interactions that take place, and the work touches on how the imbalances in the microbiome can lead to disease. He also said we will try and identify the factors that shape and change the microbiome of oak trees to see if we can engineer them towards a healthy status.
So my first story is about how researchers are using insect wings to inspire new ways to fight superbugs. An antimicrobial nanomaterial has been developed that was inspired by the structure of insect wings. The wings of dragonflies have been well known to kill microbes on contact because of their unique nanostructure that stretches, slices, or tears apart any bacteria that come into contact with them. Their wings are covered in tiny nanopillars, which cause physical damage to bacterial cells. It's a really cool concept, and materials which mimic the surface of insect wings could be used to produce antibacterial surfaces and even surgical instruments. Unlike antimicrobial chemicals and drugs, physical methods of killing bacteria could be the key to controlling infection in a world rapidly running out of antibiotic therapies. The researchers are exploring the differences in surfaces, as some dragonflies' wings have more effective antibacterial effects than others. It must be really hard to produce these nanomaterials, because even the tiniest change in shape or size could make the surface less deadly to the bacteria. Factors such as density, height, and width of these nanopillars, which are seriously tiny, have a huge impact on their efficacy. The next big challenge that the researchers face is finding a cost-effective way of producing these nanostructured materials. Either way, it's definitely opening the door to a new age of antimicrobial nanotechnology.
A new study by researchers from the University of Texas has uncovered new information on the confusing fact that Ebola virus can live within bats without causing harm, but wreak deadly havoc in people. Hosts that are killed by viruses aren't actually good hosts. Viruses need to replicate and spread to survive. If they're killing the host, the virus will eventually die out. Viruses that cause serious disease usually have a natural reservoir or animal that they can replicate in but not cause disease. Like many RNA viruses, Ebola's molecules are structured in a way that makes genomic errors and mutations happen more frequently. Because of this, they have the remarkable ability to adapt to and replicate in new environments. The research team investigated how the Ebola virus adapts to both bat and human cells. They assessed changes in mutation rates and the structure of Ebola virus populations. The group identified a number of changes between bats and humans. For example, the envelope protein of Ebola virus increases dramatically in certain mutations within bat cells, but this was not found in human cells, identifying a novel mechanism by which Ebola virus is likely to evolve in bats. The study suggests that Ebola and bats can live together harmoniously because of the bat cell's ability to induce changes in the virus that make it less capable of harm. The study's findings could be very useful in researching the evolution of emerging viruses like the virus responsible for COVID-19.
We've spoken about microbes from the exclusion zone around the Chernobyl nuclear power plant a few times on the podcast. A fungus collected from the cooling pools of the power plant was in the news this month. The fungus, called Cladosporium cherospermum, may have a role to play in protecting astronauts from cosmic radiation. Galactic cosmic radiation is a major safety concern for anyone spending long periods of time in space, with the year required to travel to and from Mars exposing the body to two-thirds of the allowable lifetime exposure. Exposure to radiation has a number of health risks, including the risk of cancers. Cladosporium uses radiation for energy and carries out a photosynthesis-like reaction which converts radioactive energy into chemical energy, meaning it could be used as a radiation shield. Of course, the radiation in space is quite different from the radiation in a nuclear reactor, not to mention the reduced gravity and different environmental conditions. So to test its potential, the fungus was taken up to the International Space Station. And what they did was they put plates of the fungus, like swabbed onto it, to see if it would survive and grow and make kind of a lawn across these agar plates whilst in space. And they found that it did. When it comes into contact with the radiation, this fungus like produces a dark pigment like melanin, which they think they could have like two layers of plastic with a bunch of fungus lawn basically on windows and through the walls of the ship, which would kind of filter out the radiation which the fungus needs to survive, and also build up this kind of melanin, which would be a bit of a kind of shield. So it's pretty cool, quite promising and quite exciting.
So my last story is a bit of a weird one and also about space. So what if I told you that space makes bacteria more deadly? You might not believe it, but it's true. Scientists have found that bacteria exposed to microgravity, the conditions in space, are less susceptible to antibiotics and more lethal. They also stay this way for a short time after returning to Earth compared with bacteria that never left Earth. They also mutate faster, but the mutating seems to be adapting to the new environment rather than become super deadly. In space, where there is minimal gravity, several effects are changed. For example, sedimentation, convection, and buoyancy are all minimized, but liquid surface tension and capillary forces, which is when liquid flows to fill a narrow space, become more intense. These changes could be why the bacteria become more resistant and deadly, as it could change how they take up nutrients and antibiotics. Microgravity has also been shown to promote biofilm formation as well. These biofilms have been reported to grow and attach to equipment on space stations, causing them to biodegrade. They've affected the Mir space station's navigation window, air conditioning, oxygen electrolysis block, water recycling unit, and thermal control system. As I'm sure you can guess, it can have devastating effects. But it's not all bad news. There are some positive impacts. Molecular crystals grow much larger and more symmetrically in space. Having these more uniform crystals allows the creation of more effective drugs and treatments to combat various diseases, including cancers and Parkinson's disease.
So many of us will know that having a staycation and going up for holiday in the UK is probably one of the only ways that we're going to get to see the sea this year. And this month, images emerged of a huge plankton bloom off the southwest coast of England. The bloom, which is caused by a type of microscopic algae called coccolithophores, turned the ocean a bright turquoise for over 5 days. And it was so massive and the colour so pigmented, it could be seen from space. Apparently, the incredible colour was the result of billions of these microscopic algae rising to the surface, combined with the particularly good weather. According to researchers from Plymouth Marine Laboratory, this may be the biggest coccolithophore bloom to have ever been recorded in the English Channel. These microbes are a type of phytoplankton and are one of the most abundant organisms on the planet. They're found in every ocean and are covered in complex, scale-like structures called coccoliths. These scales are made from calcium carbonate, and the pattern of scales varies depending on the species. A coccolithophore bloom occurs when these algae rise to the surface of the water to photosynthesize, absorbing sunlight and carbon dioxide. Because of the carbonite crystals in the coccoliths, the surfaces of the water becomes more reflective during this time, which is why the sea appeared a brighter, more vibrant blue.
That's really cool. Have you ever seen pictures of coccolithophores?
Yeah, they're tiny and they look really great.
Really cool. There's lots of pictures of scanning electron micrographs of them. They're amazing. Thanks for listening. As usual, we'll leave links to all the stories in the podcast description below. We'll see you next time.